Welcome to SVS Podchats with me, Suzanne Slade, and Fiona Robinson. We are speech and language therapists and training providers with a particular interest in voice and swallowing disorders. We aim to bring you some interesting conversations that we hope will inspire and inform your practice.
Suzanne, it's lovely to see you today on Zoom again. And we're going to be talking about some of the issues that our trainees, current and previous, have come up with during these very strange times, about how they're building on and maintaining their fees competencies.
Yeah, nice to see you, Fiona, and welcome all of you listeners. Well, our listeners are growing because we've just heard that we've had 300 downloads, Fiona, haven't we, for one of our episodes. I thought it was worth making a comment that these podcasts, in some respects, are like the little informal chats that you have when you are at a training day or a SEN. What I was thinking about is how much we all miss going to various meetings like that, and that part of the beauty of going to those training events is the contact that you have with other therapists and the informal chats that you have over coffee, picking each other's brains. I think we're all missing those conversations. And as we, you and I, Fiona, relax into this business of creating a podcast, I hope that we're creating something that is reasonably informal, but still informative, and that it might just help to fill in that gap that we're all feeling of those little professional conversations. What do you think, Fiona?
I do. And whilst you've got us today, and we've had some great guests already, and we've got some smashing guests lined up, haven't we? So do look out for those in the weeks to come, and they'll be coming out shortly. But for today, we're going to be turning our attention to our delegates and trainee fees practitioners who've already probably attended a course. They've probably had their hands on an endoscope and they've been starting to do their passes, and maybe have got even up to about 5 or 6 passes on their peers or even starting with patients. And then suddenly everything's been interrupted, hasn't it? And they're taking on both the assessor and the endoscopist role. But we think that there's lots that people can be doing now to maintain those competencies and really build on them. What do you think, Suzanne?
Absolutely. I think there is a fair bit of frustration out there, but actually our message will be that you absolutely do not need to halt your progress. Okay, you might not be able to actually carry out fees examinations because of various restrictions, but there's a whole load of things that you can be getting on with. And the first really important point to make before we go into the detail of this is please do document everything that you do, whether it's reading, looking at YouTube clips, document it, because you'll never regret that. You'll build then your portfolio of evidence that shows how you have progressed your competency. So that's top of the list, really. First key point, document everything. But other than that, Fiona, maybe it's worth thinking about the structure of the fees examination and the fees protocol. And we very much adhere to Langmore's fees protocol, don't we, when we're doing our training?
Yes. We usually start with the pre-swallowing assessment, where we're looking at the anatomy and physiology from starting through the nose right through to laryngeal structure and function. And then we move into the swallowing assessment proper, which is where we'd be introducing diet trials and then putting in some interventions and rehabilitation strategies, because you might be wanting to move that patient on during that session. And then scoring, rating scales, maybe of edema, aspiration, etc. After that, coming up with a hypothesis. So there's a whole section around managing those findings and what we're going to do beyond that. And then there's all that post-procedure, which is important, where you're liaising and pulling things together. So there's quite a lot of sections to a fees protocol. There's lots that people can be doing for each of those sections that they can build on and extend their competencies. But what about those therapists who can't get into clinic? There are some resources, aren't there, that they can do?
Certainly. There's some great resources out there that you can look at. So look at YouTube, look at the fees examinations that are on there. And you could, again, sit with a colleague or sit by yourself and go through as if you were doing the FEES examination. So you could look at those stages of the FEES examinations that we've just talked about, looking at the pre-swallow assessment of structure and function. They may not have gone through in a lot of detail. It might not be included in that YouTube clip, but see if they have, and see if you can do a little mini assessment and rating yourself. Look at their swallow assessment and do the penetration aspiration scale. Look at the secretion rating scale, the New Zealand secretion rating scale. You could look at residue, the Yale residue rating scale would be useful to use. But as well as that, you could broaden it out and you search on YouTube. You could look and search under the anatomy of the nasal cavity. And there's some great little clips on YouTube, some diagrams that talk about the nasal anatomy and following the passages through as you're doing a nasendoscopy examination. So those things are useful for getting your eye in and keeping those skills there. But also you might want to search on YouTube for some of the common incidental findings like laryngeal edema. Look at Reinke's edema. Reinke's edema is fairly common, particularly in women who have smoked. So even if you're going to be working in a stroke unit, you may well see a case of Reinke's edema. It's a benign condition, but you want to be able to recognize it and document it. You may see signs of laryngeal reflux. And again, you could search that on YouTube and you will find some clips of that. So really useful to get your eye on that. Look at vocal cord polyp, vocal cord palsy. And you will see clips on YouTube of those things. So really useful to be able to identify those things, particularly if you don't have an ENT background or a voice background.
Yes.
And great to get your eye in.
So what about the pre-swallowing side of it and what people can be doing either in clinic or outside of clinic?
If we're looking at the structure and the function, first of all, if you're lucky enough to work within ENT, then you're in a good position in that you could be just sitting in on clinics. You probably already do. Obviously, there are restrictions at the moment, but there's a lot of joint working going on. So as long as you're wearing your PPE, then you can sit in on clinics and watch examinations. But it's that, oh, you used a term, Fiona, earlier on, active watching. Was that what you called it?
Yes, active observation. So you're not just sitting observing, but you go in almost with a checklist of what you want to see. You're mentally rehearsing what might come up on the screen. You're mentally rehearsing what you might want to do later on if a certain presentation occurs. But yes, it's watching actively and making notes and being really part of that thinking process.
So you could observe a number of examinations and just look at the structure and the function of those patients as the ENT consultant examines them. But what you might want to do is, if you know that one of your patients is booked into the consultant clinic for a review, then why not go along to that clinic appointment and check out with the consultant ahead of time? But it may be that they might allow you to do a mini FEES examination. So you might want to test out function. You might work through tongue base, pharynx and larynx. You might be able to get the patient to protrude the tongue and retract it, to say the dark L sounds, ball, fall, and look at that tongue base function and movement. Then you might look at pharyngeal squeeze, and you might then also look at laryngeal function, getting them to do some E sounds or an E sniff, look at how the vocal cords are retracting. So those things are really useful to do. Mm. If you already have your own equipment, but you're not using it yet, what you could do is, again, check, but you could take your own equipment in for the consultant to use. So then you could record this. Now, bear in mind that a lot of ENT consultants don't record their examinations, so they're not used to recording. So you need to be proactive and get ready to record it. You're then really quickly working through those assessments of function and storing that data. You can go through that and reflect with colleagues what you're seeing. Do it swiftly so you're not holding up the consultant's clinic, and then take your time to review those images. The other things that you can be doing is looking at secretions. You could observe those secretions. Again, if you've recorded it, review those images later, and you could go through the secretion rating scale. You could look at the New Zealand rating scale, look at it with a colleague, see if you agree. And if you've got the time and if you agree it with a consultant, you might go on to a couple of teaspoons of something. Fiona, remembering when you and I started with all of this back in the early 90s, and we were initially just using, well, milk nase endoscopy. There is a paper, here's the reference, milk nase endoscopy in the assessment of dysphagia, and that's by Wilson et al, published in 1992. It's about a super brief and quick assessment of swallow function, giving the patient just one consistency. And we tended to give milk because it's opaque and you can see it easily. So you could give 2 or 3 teaspoons of milk to the patient, obviously depending on their level of function, and watch what happens. Record it. That could be a really quick, simple, brief part of a FEES, looking at swallow function.
It doesn't have to take very long, does it, to add those little bits in to that examination? And it's easier, I think, if you work in an ENT department, because you're used to popping in and out of those clinics and the surgeons are used to you being there. And if they know that you're still training in FEES, they will often create opportunities for you, as any good supervisor would, to enable you to progress your skills. And the other thing that occurs to me as you're talking, Suzanne, is that we sometimes feel that we have to do a full FEES from nose tip to larynx and back again and everything in between and the whole protocol. And we don't. FEES isn't about that. I think when you're learning, we tend to have so many that we need to do and tick off. But all those FEES protocols are very complex and there are so many elements to think about. It feels a bit piecemeal, but actually chunking it up so that it's a smaller learning event, really. That's what we should be doing in real life FEES training in the normal times. So don't feel that it's somehow second rate if it's a small part. I think it's just as valid. And as you said earlier at the beginning, record everything, write it down, put it in your portfolio, reflect on your learning, and then you can think, right, this is what I'll do next time. And you can either repeat that because you didn't feel you quite got it, or you can move on to the next thing because you think, actually, I've got that bit under my belt now.
But the other thing I was going to say, Fiona, is we said about the ENT therapists being able to pop in perhaps a little bit more readily, but I don't see why therapists maybe who work in a stroke unit or work in neuro or critical care, if you're wanting to try and get in on the back of an ENT examination, then do so. You know, if ENT are coming onto critical care, try and schedule it, ask if you can join them so that they're doing the examination, but you can be there as the assessor and you can be directing that examination. Again, think ahead, plan, talk through with the ENT doctor before the examination and say, look, these are the things that I think I might see and these are the things that I really would like to check out. Are you happy to do that with me? Are you happy for me to ask the patient to trial some things, to linger so that I can check out secretions and watch what happens to those secretions? So you could certainly do that. If you're more of an outpatient therapist, if your patient is having an ENT consultation as an outpatient, then try, if you can, to make the time to go along with the patient. I know it takes time out of your day because these things do take time. You might be having to go to a different site, but it's really worthwhile. You can talk to the ENT consultant, let them know that you're going to come, talk to the ENT nursing manager, check on the PPE that you need to wear, and sit in on the examination. Again, discuss with the ENT doctor, look, these are the things that I'm concerned about. Could we do this during the examination? And usually ENT consultants are more than happy. They want to know why you've referred for an ENT investigation, what you're looking out for and what your concerns are. And they really value that input. Do be aware that if you are going to progress to a mini FEES examination where you're going to be giving the patient something to eat or drink, that you may then be going into an AGP. So the patient may well cough. So you need to prepare the nurse who's covering that clinic, because obviously then you're going to have to vacate that room possibly. Just be aware of those things and check it out and talk it through. But I think that'd be great time spent, don't you, Fiona?
I do. And what I'm hearing as you're going through quite a lot of detail there about the sorts of aspects that trainees can be getting some experience in. I'm hearing that preparation is really key. So it is that mindful, active observation, making sure that you've planned in advance so that if you go through the FEES protocol mentally, you can pick out some things where you think, I'm not quite so sure about that. So I'm going to ask the consultant to be a bit slower so I can really understand the anatomy. Just spend another 10 seconds in the pharynx so I can check the pharyngeal squeeze, or to pan around a little bit more so I can really understand where the secretions are sitting in the spaces. Planning that, going through the protocol in your head, take your clipboard with you and tick off what you need to do. And bringing all that together with your peers afterwards, I think it's really important.
I just wanted to add that final part of the FEES procedure and training is looking at that post-procedure report writing. So you could write, again, those FEES that you observe on YouTube, most of them are quite short, but you could have a go at drafting out a FEES report from that. So all useful experience. So any pre-recorded FEES that you can get your hands on, then try writing a report.
Yes. And that's a really good point, Suzanne, because most of the stacks in speech and language therapy swallowing departments will have FEES stored on them, won't they? Or people might have removable hard drives that are archived that you can get set up. And you could spend a couple of mornings going through some of these archived cases. Definitely worth having a look at that. And you can critically appraise those. You can think to yourself, was that image good enough? Did I get into the anterior commissure? Did they have to change direction because the patient got distressed, or there was aspiration, or there was something unexpected? So having a look at those, either on your own or with a peer, again, excellent learning opportunities. One of the competencies that we have in the RCSLT documents is about storing and retrieving images. And is a really important competence to have, because then that means that you can be doing this outside of the clinic room. So you can download them into whatever network or facility you're able to use, and then sit with your colleagues and go through those so that you can then hypothesize, if I was doing a full FEES, what would I have done next? What diet would I have liked to try? What do I think I would have seen? And what rehab strategies might have been useful here? I know, Suzanne, we've done FEES, and at the end of it, we've still thought, oh, I really wish we'd tried a chin tuck. Because sometimes when you're thinking on your feet, you don't always get everything right, do you? And the last thing you want to do is have to go back and rescope the patients. Looking at those things and thinking, well, I wish we'd done that, or next time I would do that. And this all helps you to embed that knowledge and skills so that you're much more prepared when you get there the next time. We've got any thoughts there? You're nodding away.
Well, I'm thinking about those therapists that might be listening and thinking, yeah, but I just can't spare the time to go along for a joint consultation. And feeling their frustration, really, and thinking about what they can do. So I was thinking, number one, you could just audit and think about some of the patients that you are seeing at the moment. You don't have access to FEES at the moment, but you could look at how many patients currently do you think would benefit from a FEES examination, and look at that patient journey and map it and think and plan how could that patient journey be changed if we were able to offer FEES, and reflect on that, because doing maybe a few case studies and looking at that is really useful for any future business case that you need for getting equipment and funded. But I think it's a really useful learning process. Also, perhaps you can offer video fluoroscopy, but you can't offer FEES. So you could look at your examination afterwards and reflect, okay, what would this look like in a FEES examination? How would this translate? What would I expect to see? Because the big learning when you've been used to doing video fluoroscopy and then you change to doing FEES is that totally different perspective from looking laterally at those black and white shades of grey images to looking from the axial plane, looking down on the swallow, seeing it in colour, looking at the secretions and then being right in your face. And there are studies that report that we overestimate the severity of residue because it is right there in your face on a FEES examination. But yes, from that video fluoroscopy, document it, go through the FEES protocol and think, what would I have seen? How would I have tested this bit out? And how would a FEES of perhaps enhance the videofluoroscopy, or perhaps maybe on the videofluoroscopy you saw cervical spine osteophytes. You know, you could say, well, okay, fees might not have shown that. So perhaps the fees wouldn't have been so good on this patient. So it's just putting fees into the equation with that case and reflecting on it with, again, with colleagues, if you can. If you can't, then yourself, bring out all your fees notes and the training that you've had to date and really reflect on that. What do you think, Fiona?
Looking at the videofluoroscopy images, I think is really useful. And of course, to have got to the point of training for fees, people should have a familiarisation with videofluoroscopy anyway. And I think it would be useful to look at those cases and think, I'm going to now go on YouTube and look at some fees images or endoscopy images of a cervical osteophyte and see what it looks like. So you can start to pick out those segments and see what it would look like on fees or on endoscopy. And I was thinking a lot of this is from the assessor point of view, isn't it? We think maybe the endoscopy part of it is going to be more difficult to do during these difficult times. But I think there's still quite a lot that you can do as an endoscopist as well. And we put a blog out earlier in the summer about how to maintain your skills and how quickly do your physical skills actually deteriorate over time. I think it was pretty good news. I think the research shows that if you're already quite competent, that they don't deteriorate. But of course, what about those trainees who maybe have done 4 or 5 or maybe just practiced on a mannequin head or a peer? I think there's some great things that you can do there. The endoscopy companies are always really helpful and they are very keen to show equipment. And at the moment, they might not be able to get into the hospitals, but it's worth an ask to see if they might have a mannequin head, or talk to your postgraduate medical education centres and see if they've got any mannequin heads so that you can continue to feel confident about passing the endoscope through the nose. Because I think that's always a bit of a difficult one when you've been out of it for a little while. I remember us having to cajole and push each other to do that if we'd had a couple of weeks off, and then you feel like you're less competent and you're not going to be slick. The other thing where my own learning was always a little bit patchy was when you have to use a new scope, a new stat system. And for those people who are really keen to move on with the endoscopy skills, it's definitely worth having access to the stack that you're going to be working with if you can. And remember how to switch it on and go through that routine, because that's where sometimes you need to be a bit more slick. We spent a lot of time scratching our heads, like, where is the on-off button? I just can't remember how to record. How do we put the patient's details in? And then at the end of it, how do we get those images back and talk to the patient? It may be our scopes were a little bit more complicated than other people's originally, but it's still really useful to have that practical skill rehearsal. And then just knowing how to set up your endoscope, how to do your light balance. And in fact, you've gone through that in one of your videos, haven't you? That's on our website. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, at the beginning of lockdown, I made a really simple video using my iPhone, some equipment that was loaned to me very kindly by DP Medical. I used their Zion stack and scope and their head mannequin, and I did a little review of how to hold and manipulate the nose endoscope. Because you maybe have attended a course, you've gone through those skills, so absolutely keep on top of that. And as you say, Fiona, grabbing hold of the scope, plugging it into your stack, and holding it and talking through, rehearsing how you sit the patient, what instructions do you give to the patient, how do you stand yourself, how do you hold the scope, all of those things so important, so that once you can actually get back to all of this, you are red hot on that, you know, you absolutely know it and it feels familiar still. So don't underestimate that, is so useful. And we were saying about observing ENT or observing another fees practitioner as they're doing their nose endoscopy, look at how they stand and hold the scope and how they manipulate the nose endoscope, and observe with a critical eye. Look, is their weight well balanced? How are they standing? Now with ENT, you'll notice that when they do an examination, they've seen what they need to see often within 30 seconds. So they don't have to stand for a whole 20 or 30 minutes and do a very complex assessment as we do. So think, okay, this is how they stand. This is how they hold the scope. But actually, this is how I stand. This is how I need to stand so that I can be comfortable and so that my shoulders don't ache and I can actually stand there for the full 20 minutes and not have to draw the assessment to a close because I'm so uncomfortable. So lots to learn from that, as you said, that really mindful observation, that watching with a critical eye, but learning because they get through that nose so smoothly, so quickly, but also being aware that sometimes they don't. If you get to sit in a whole ENT clinic, you will see the range of noses and that some patients are actually really difficult. And it takes a hugely skilled ENT consultant, even they will find some noses a bit more tricky. Observe how patients tolerate it. Some patients really do not tolerate nasal endoscopy very easily. So what does the consultant do? What tips do they give to the patient? Look at that, because it's so easy when we're learning to think that it's just our lack of skill that means that we're getting very slowly through this nose, but sometimes that's just what it's like. But it gives you a good perspective to sit in a clinic and watch examination after examination. You can learn a huge amount from that. We were talking about, you know, if you can't do any of this, if you don't have a stack, if you don't have access to ENT, you can do some reading, but focus your reading. So some of the things to start with, obviously reading the RCSLT policy document, the new document that was out this year, 2020. So really get so that you know that document inside out. And of course, it's got a great reference list. But in addition to that, we found the South Australian Acute Hospital Program for credentialing speech pathologists in the extended and advanced practice role of independent fees. And that was 2016. And it includes some little YouTube references, which are useful. So I'd absolutely recommend looking at that. Also, a great thing to read is the 2017 article by Langmore, which was published in Dysphagia. And that's the history of fees, changes over the years, looking at how we've gotten to this point where fees is, well, arguably the gold standard swallow assessment, obviously, with video fluoroscopy, but lots of really useful references within that article. And particularly, it mentions some protocols for use on the stroke unit, for use with Parkinson's disease. So a great article to read with some fantastic references. Other authors, Jessica Pisania, she obviously works with Langmore, but she's written some really helpful articles. One of them is about rating residue that was published in Dysphagia 2018. So there's lots of good reading. Again, document everything that you've read, put it in your log and your portfolio of evidence. So some good reading to be done.
Because it's not just about skill, it's about knowledge as well. And of course, I've always got to talk a bit about learning theory, and we know that people learn and have deep learning if it's experiential, but also reflection is really important on that to deepen your knowledge, self-reflection or reflection with peers. And all of this, because people have already started their training, everything that we've talked about today will activate your prior learning, so then you'll be ready to understand what your next step is. And most of you will have a supervisor, so you can discuss these ideas with your supervisor and they might be able to create some of these learning opportunities for you as well. And with telehealth, I think it's fab that you can share screens and talk about things face to face, even if you're not on the same site. So, Suzanne, do you think we've covered everything?
Just a couple of tiny points. The other thing is looking at making sure that you've got all of your policies and procedures in place and done all of those, the contacts with relevant people within your trust. So it's looking at your own departmental fees policy, getting that written, looking at your decontamination policy and speaking to the right people about that, making sure that you're IG compliant in the way that you're recording your images. If you're allowed to use Tristel, you could do your Tristel training. Get that done. Speak to Tristel. We were talking about the digital imaging companies. I believe that they are now allowed into hospitals, so they can come in and show their equipment. So yeah, I think the message is there's such a lot you can be doing to keep your skills moving forward. It absolutely doesn't have to stop. Look at our website under the resources page, because we have some information there. And as you mentioned, Fiona, we've got our blog on there as well. Grab every opportunity you can. Don't get despondent because you can't do actual fees at the moment.
I wanted to say it doesn't take long to do these small learning events. They don't take a lot of time, but they accumulate, don't they? And as long as you plan and you can be quite creative about how you develop your competence. And it just reminded me of that lovely clip in Morecambe and Wise with Andre Previn, where Eric Morecambe says, "I'm playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order." And I think that's what it feels like to me at the moment. We've got all the stuff in place. It's not necessarily how you would have planned to do it. But hey, let's get going and see what we can make of it.
I think that's a great way to finish off, Fiona. Absolutely sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, thanks, Suzanne. That was a great chat with you this morning. So
yeah, fantastic.
Look forward to seeing you soon. And for all our listeners, thanks for tuning in. And please have a look on our website and do listen out for our next pod chats that are coming up, and check out our website for our blogs as well. So thanks a lot. Cheerio.
Bye.
Bye.